Hello, everybody, and welcome to Yotin International Radio. You're listening to Taylor Tech Stories, and today we have Tim Gorter coming in, who's the owner of Teletechnics, and he's going to tell us his career story right from starting out and to what he does today in his own company. So I'll leave it to over to you, Tim, for the introduction of yourself, and then we'll dive into to your career.
So, hi. My name is Tim. I'm from a pretty mixed background. I come from New Zealand. So I grew up in New Zealand, although my parents are from Europe, from Germany and Netherlands. So I grew up with various languages and in various different places. When I left school, I kind of dropped directly into sailing. I started on tall ships. Working on some of the adventure ships, shall I say, which sail training ships in the early years. And that really got me into the maritime scene, where I then developed into the radio side as a radio officer and onwards to what nowadays is the AV side.
Right, okay. And so when you're starting out, kind of what is that position? Is it an apprenticeship, a kind of bit of everything sort of role, or is it quite specialist?
When I started in sailing, I kind of went the officer route, as in I was in the beginning, I was a mate on a vessel, and I went through the schooling of being a mate, and I actually went to the Netherlands to a special sail training type tall ship school, where I got my master's ticket to actually be a skipper on the tall ships. That said, I've never actually taken up the opportunity, because while I was doing that, I was kind of run away with doing more of the communication stuff and the radio stuff, which was a lot more exciting than the responsibilities of a captain, shall I say.
Right, okay.
Yeah. I got to more projects that were fun at being, you know, in my mid-20s, shall I say.
Yeah, that's understandable, especially working internationally, especially anything to do with the marine, maritime and certainly yachting. It's very much, in many aspects, it's a young person's game. And there's lots of fun roles. I mean, much of it is hard work by any description, but there's certainly these crazy stories that come out and roles that you just don't get in any other industry. You're currently doing the communications and things. So what happens next? What's the next kind of progression?
Well, when I was doing that, let's say early on, before I actually straight out, a typical thing that happens when you fall out of school in New Zealand, you know, when you finished the school and you, before you go into university, you take that year off and do a bit of a trip around the globe. And I ended up being in France quite some time. And every time I spoke to somebody in France, tell them that you're from New Zealand, there were two topics that always came up at that time. One, the All Blacks, rugby, you know, anything, best rugby team, you talk about the sports. And the other thing is Greenpeace, with the activities that Greenpeace does, and how, of course, France had the episode where the government there did a action against the Rainbow Warrior in New Zealand. And so that was always a conversation point. And so when I went back to New Zealand, and later on when I was doing the studying in the Netherlands, I actually contacted Greenpeace, got to know them a little bit more, and with them I started sailing. I got a few jobs, and that's also where I got then quite a few of the radio tasks, and I was involved in setting up all the comms and the research equipment, everything, because Greenpeace in those days was really technically heavy, shall I say, in trying to develop transmitting video over satellite and those kind of activities. And that's why I say those kind of projects were a lot of fun. And
right.
That got me into the AV world, the IT world, and yeah, I really got to know the intricacies of doing all this stuff at sea. You know, the challenges of not being connected via cable, and in the early days it was via. The first time that I had to communicate, I was in the middle of the Pacific, and we were going to stop at Pitcairn, and the only way to communicate with them was via Morse code to open up the conversation. So there I was. My Morse code was not the best, shall I say, and every time I attempted it, they hit me back at a 25 words per minute kind of rate, which totally blows me away. So I got a piece of equipment out with a computer to try and, you know, work the Morse code out to see what they were replying.
Right. Okay. That sounds actually very fast. I've never listened to Morse code at any particular speed, but I type at about, well, to be fair, pretty fast at like kind of 90 words per minute, but that in dots and dashes will be, I don't know what that would sound like.
When you start to learn everything and you're considered good if you're doing 10 to 15 words per minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
And here they were doing it nearly at double that.
Yeah. So you were involved with the conversion of the Morse code communications into something more like radio communications?
Well, I mean, that was just to open up the conversation. As soon as one got the contact, you actually moved over to voice, and then it was just the old-fashioned single sideband, so doing a radio call kind of thing. But, you know, that's one of those challenges, just, you know, to keep you going. I mean, in those early days, it was, you know, engineer came along, he wanted to send roses to his wife, so you had to create a telex and that kind of thing. There was no thing like email or something like, you know, any of that. And yeah. In my set, in that regard, the phone over satellite was the latest invention, and most vessels didn't actually have it. I mean, we had one of the first units.
Yeah, and the difficulties of what, of these kind of times and communications back then, it made a lot of things quite fun. Like now you just get thrown out.
Absolutely.
And it's way too easy, but I love the stories that surface from these kind of these types of challenges that are laughable today, but at the time it was like
exactly
no other way.
I mean, I can tell just the same kind of story on that, where the first suitcase type satellite unit was being used, and we took one of those suitcases out to a oil platform in the North Sea to do some video transfer. And because it was brand new and it wasn't actually commissioned yet, you had to go through this whole process with the teleport and trying to make it work. The unit wasn't wired properly and everything. So you're there in the middle of the ocean, this brand new suitcase that wasn't actually, well, wasn't beta, shall we say. You're trying to figure out how they wire it up, rewire it, and go through a commissioning process, which, unlike today, which is, you know, you find a satellite, tap a few commands, and kind of off you go. Those days it was a good half day's work of various steps. And they kept you busy and they kept you very entertained.
Right. Okay, cool. So you're at Greenpeace, you're doing these kind of projects. What's next?
Yeah. What's next? Well, as I said, with Greenpeace, I did a lot of satellite stuff. I did a lot of video stuff. And that kind of then got me off the ships. You know, I spent with Greenpeace and everything else there, probably about 8 years. So in my early 30s, shall I say, I ended up being asked to help out on a satellite transmission for a television. And I ended up being in various war zones in Kosovo and Afghanistan and those regions, setting up suddenly the live news for various channels, from BBC to CNN. And then suddenly I found myself places like Japan doing the Football World Cup and the Olympics in Athens. Got me really around the TV side and the broadcasting side of the technology, which was another jump into the deep end, but I had loads of fun, and I learned a heck of a lot.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, right? Jump in the deep end, go for it, see what happens, and you get these stories where you end up in these different countries, innovating products, pushing boundaries, doing all that, and then and you grow, you learn all these things, and it makes.
I mean, the time I did in university, I never thought that any of the stuff that I was learning in university would actually be practical. And that's kind of, you know, yep, I learned about electronics. I learned about certain things. But then there were other events when you're out in these fields, which is, you know, how to deal with people and the psychology of various people, which you can never be prepared for. But that's what I love about it, you know. The environment that I see it on the maritime world and the environment that I had with the colleagues in the broadcasting world was special, was good, and definitely something that I enjoyed.
Okay, so how do you go from this into founding your own company and kind of doing what you're doing today?
Well, I with the broadcasting world, I actually ended up in Singapore for a few years, and I ended up at a desk job, and I'm not really that desk job orientated, shall I say.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like
sitting behind a computer today is just not the same. And so I got into contact with some of my old mates from the shipping times, and they got me in touch with various people over there in Singapore. And when my contract there finished, I moved back with the family that I had now created back to Spain. My wife is from Spain. And being based in Barcelona, I met up again with various people and got asked various tasks to do on the yachts and helping various companies and trying to fix troubleshoot issues. And that's where I saw the opportunity that there's quite a few vessels there where they're reducing the number of crews, so they don't actually have all the expertise on board that they need. And the engineer normally gets dumped with, you know, from being a specialist on turbines from I don't know, everything in the engine room, you could say. Right through to suddenly being an IT expert. And that's where I said, well, maybe I can give a helping hand there. And that's what I've been doing for the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's quite a nice niche. So will you kind of tune into these, to the scene and visualize the problem and kind of talk an engineer through these sort of things? Or how does the actual problem...
Yeah, well, my context normally comes from the fact that there is a problem on board and they need some troubleshooting. And so I kind of go through with the engineers. If I can go on board and help, I, of course, go through certain steps to try and figure it out. And I make sure that when I go through these steps, I actually lay them out to the engineer as well, so that he is aware of what has happened, why, and how he can avoid it in the future. And the same way, what I do is at a distance now, where if I'm on a contract, I kind of have a unit on board that gives me insight to the system. If it's just by a phone call or something like that, I try and step it through where issues lie, because very often you can say, hey, I have no connection to the internet, where the problem is actually not the connection to the internet, but an issue of the Wi-Fi that's on board, where the unit is actually not connecting to the Wi-Fi system. So to try and pinpoint where that issue is, try to localize it, then makes it much easier for them to understand where to look and how to fix the situation.
Okay, yeah. And from a business model point of view, I suppose that allows you to administrate and solve these problems for a whole fleet of vessels, as opposed to being on board one and having that extra crew member to maintain and have on board, which is expensive and
exactly
and everything else. and those issues disappear, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the idea, is that apart from that I'm there as a troubleshooting guy that helps in the case of when issues show up, I try and be a side hand in preparing them for what maintenance might need to be done during the year. All these issues that, well, make sure that this system works better for you or for the vessel, shall I say, throughout. And without actually incurring those extra costs of having somebody on board, a specialist, that that you know, you have certain overheads that many vessels just don't want to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is the way things are going. I speak to quite a few different businesses, and the whole remotely solving challenges on board, whether it's to do with accounting and admin of documents or even equipment, and having one person on site, but actually a team of specialists, God knows where else in the world, to help them out. It seems to be a movement that's certainly taken place in the superyacht sector. And I imagine across the whole of maritime, really.
Well, yeah, I think it's happening in many, many sectors. I always look back at a story that my uncle once told me, who was a pilot. And one day he landed the plane in, I don't know, in Canada or something like that. And along came a technician saying, "Oh, I'm here to fix this, this and this." And he says, "Fix what?" He says, "Yeah, I have this report of all these things that you had during the flight." And he says, "Yeah. What things?" And luckily they were not major things, but you know, the captain kind of went back to the company saying, "I want to know about these while I'm flying, not when the technician arrives." Yeah. So, and that's happening in the maritime world as well. Maybe not to extreme, I hope, because I think it's very important that the people on board actually know what to do. And that's my main focus, is to empower the people that are on board to face the situation. But like everybody, you can't know everything all the time.
Yeah. And with this increase in specialization and the complexity of equipment these days, a certain way into technology, I mean, you can't really expect one person to be able to administrate everything on a superyacht. It's just not possible, really. But certainly hearing your story and your background and what you're doing today, you can see exactly why you've started your company and why you're doing what you're doing. So Tim, thank you very much for coming on the show and sharing your story.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. And I wish you all your best with all the other interviews you're doing as well.
Thank you very much. We'll keep in touch. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Yachting International Radio. You've been listening to Taylor Tech Stories with myself, Ben Taylor, and we will see you on the next episode. Bye for now.